As mentioned, I'm going to be out at the end of the month. I'll be doing a meeting down in a small congregation outside of Tulsa in Oklahoma. And so decided, since I have to do a theme, they asked for a theme on evidences that the Bible is true. And so I decided, well, since I'm doing that, I might as well get practiced. So I'm going to practice several of my lessons with y'all as I get ready for that meeting. We know that the Bible is God's direction for mankind. It is not a history book per se. That is, it doesn't document all the history in the world. But it does talk about a small portion of the history of the world, but it's a very relevant portion to our history. It's not a science book. That is, it doesn't contain details about how science works, but it does mention scientific facts once in a while. It's not a medical book, but it does mention medical health facts once in a while. It is a book that's written by man, but in the sense that mankind have written it, but we know that it's God who's behind the men who wrote it. Now, when you think about it, when men write a book, when a man writes a book and the author mentions something that's not his particular line or his particular area of study and his field of expertise, or it's not the primary focus of the book that he's writing, we expect to find some inaccuracies. If you think about it, like even on radio, I every once in a while listen to various commentators. Every once in a while, a commentator will get off into religious topics. I would say a good portion of the time, they miss it. They don't understand something. It's not their field of expertise. After all, everyone doesn't know everything. But in a book that claims to be written by an all-knowing God, it ought to be accurate even in the casual side details. Now Moses, according to what Stephen tells us in Acts chapter 7, and in verse 22, Acts chapter 7, and in verse 22, it says, Moses was educated in all the learning of the Egyptians, and he was a man of power in words and deeds. Moses' education was among the Egyptians. Now, we understand the first five books of our Bibles were basically the product of the writings of Moses. Now, if that was written by Moses without inspiration of God, well, I would expect to find influences from the Egyptian ideas in those first five books. Now, what we're going to do is we're just going to focus on one aspect. We're going to look at the medical aspects of this. See, Egypt was considered the most advanced nation at the time in medical science. Now, some of this stuff will probably make Cheryl cringe, as well as a few of the rest of us. But, in fact, Dr. S.E. Massengill said Egypt was the center of the medical center of the ancient world. King Darius of the Medo-Persians Empire kept in audience a certain Egyptian doctors who had a reputation for the highest eminence in their profession. If you want a top-notch doctor on your staff, you got an Egyptian doctor. So let's take a look at some of the Egyptian medical practice. There's a document called the Ebers Papyrus. It was discovered in 1872, and it lists 811 remedies for various ailments. For example, to draw out a splinter, it was suggested that you make a poultice made of worm blood, mole, and donkey dung. You put it on there, and that's supposed to get the splinter out. Unfortunately, of course, donkey dung has filled with tetanus spores. Thus, a simple removal of a splinter often resulted in a gruesome death from lockjaw, but that's just a side issue, right? The remedy for healing skin diseases called for hog's tooth, a cat's dung, dog's dung, all of sumo oil, berries of the zet plant, all pounded and blended together to form a poultice. To promote hair growth, it was suggested you mix lizard dung with the blood from a cow, donkey, pig, dog, and stag. And you're looking and saying, this was advanced medical science at that day? But that's what they knew. Actually, some of the medical remedies actually did work. And some were helpful, but it was not consistently good. Some things did nothing. Others would cause additional problems, additional harm. For example, Egyptians believed that the pus in a wound was a good sign. And thus, many of the remedies deliberately caused infections in order to get the pus. Now, let's just contrast that with Moses' writings. In Moses' writings, while it's not a medical book, it's obvious that there was a grasp of the concept that diseases were caused by germs. And it exists in a society that had no means of seeing bacteria or viruses. It was in 1847 that an obstetrician named Ignaz Semmelweis tried to do something about the 1 out of 6 death rate in his ward. His wasn't unique. All other modern hospitals of his time had similar death rates. Can you imagine going to a hospital, you got a 1 out of 6 chance of dying? It looked really bad compared to having a baby at home with a midwife. At least the death rate there was only 3% instead of 18%. And he noticed that the doctors that were performing autopsy, rinsing their hands in bowls of bloody water, wiping them on a common towel, and then visiting their patients. And so he ordered everyone to wash their hands thoroughly in a chlorine solution after every examination. And in 3 months, the death rate went from 18% down to 1%. But that wasn't figured out until 1847. Now take a look at Numbers chapter 19. Numbers chapter 19 and in verse 11. Numbers chapter 19, starting with verse 11. The one who touches the corpse of any person shall be unclean for 7 days. That one shall purify himself from uncleanness with the water on the 3rd day and on the 7th day, and then he will be clean. But if he does not purify himself on the 3rd day and on the 7th day, he will not be clean. Anyone who touches a corpse or a body of a man who has died and does not purify himself defiles the tabernacle of the Lord, and that person shall be cut off from Israel, because the water for impurity was not sprinkled on him. He shall be unclean. His uncleanness is still on him. In other words, if you get touched a dead body, you're isolated, you're quarantined for 7 days. On top of that, you had to wash twice. Once on the third day, once on the last day, the seventh day. And that was a proper method for preventing the spread of diseases that caused somebody's death. It would have kept it down. And by the way, the water that was being used was not just ordinary water. We don't think about this very often, but that water that was being used, it was made of certain ingredients. Just take a look at verse 6. The priest shall take cedar wood and hyssop and scarlet material and cast it into the midst of the burning heifer. I guess I should have started with 5, but 5 talks about burning a heifer down to ash, and then other ingredients are mixed in with that ash. In verse 17, it says, then for the unclean person, they shall take some of the ashes of the burnt purification from sin, and flowing water shall be added to them in a vessel. You're running water through the ashes of the heifer that was burnt. And now this might sound like some magical incantation, but look at the ingredients. When you pour water through ashes, you're collecting lye. Lye soap is very caustic, but when it's diluted, it makes an excellent agent for removing dead skin cells and killing bacteria. Hyssop contains thimol, an antiseptic, which is used in some brands of mouthwash up to this day. In fact, once used for purifying temples and cleansing lepers, the leaves from contain an antiseptic antiviral oil. A mold that produces penicillin also grows on the leaves of hyssop. And it mentions cedar. Cedar wood has long been used for storage cabinets because of its ability to repel insects. It prevents decay. In oil form, applied to humans, is an antiseptic, an astringent, an expectorant. In other words, it removes the mucus from the respiratory system. It's an antifungal. It's a sedative and an insecticide. Recent research into oriental cedars do in fact have antiviral, anti-inflammatory, antibacterial properties. They also note that it inhibits the reproduction of type A influenza and is effective in treating eczema. The scarlet is referring to scarlet wool. By adding wool fiber to the concoction, well, that would make it kind of like an ancient equivalent of lava soap. You add something that gives it a little extra scrubbing power. And since it's small fibers that are bright red, anything that's still left over, it makes sure that you wash it, rinse it off real well. Otherwise, you're going to leave little red fibers all over you. In other words, long before our modern discoveries, Moses, at the direction of God, told the Israelites to wash themselves with antibacterial liquid soap. At the direction of God, when they became unclean in order to purify themselves. Well, let's take a look at those quarantine rules a little bit more. The book of Leviticus lists the symptoms of a number of diseases. And some prescribe isolation of the person who's ill. Let's take a look at Leviticus 13 and verse 46. This probably is appropriate for our modern days right now. Leviticus 13, verse 46. Talking about a leper. In verse 46, he says that he shall remain unclean all the days during which he has the infection. He is unclean. He shall live alone. His dwelling shall be outside the camp. If somebody had leprosy and was diagnosed to be leprosy, they were moved out. They were not to have contact with anybody else. In fact, if we go back to verse 45, it says, as for the leper who has the infection, his clothes shall be torn, the hair of his head shall be uncovered, and he shall cover his mustache and cry, unclean, unclean. In other words, it's crying out to make sure everybody understands, don't get close to me. And covering his mustache. Think those masks that we've been wearing. It prevents the spray from the nose and the mouth carrying germs to another person. In other words, in the Encyclopedia of Medical History, it says, the idea of contagion was foreign to the classic medical tradition and found no place in the voluminous Hippocratic writings. The Old Testament, however, is a rich source for contagionous sentiment, especially in regards to leprosy and venereal diseases. Everybody else doesn't ever think about what do you do about people sneezing and coughing and covering their mouth. Or isolation of disease-carrying people. But it's in the Old Testament. It's not like any of the other countries there. In other words, contrary to the practices of his day, Moses wrote rules for dealing with disease and its spread that really rivals modern day practice. Again, S. E. Magingel said, in the prevention of disease, however, the ancient Hebrews made real progress. The teachings of Moses, as embodied in the priestly code of the Old Testament, contains two clear concepts of modern sanitation: the importance of cleanliness and the possibility of controlling epidemics, disease, by isolation and quarantine. Now, it's clear that the teachings that are found in the Bible, while medically sound, they don't match the practices of Egypt, where Moses was trained. It doesn't match the other nations. So where does this come from? Moses must have been a medical expert back then, right? No. He was trained in government. And he spent 40 years out in the wilderness raising sheep. That doesn't make you a medical expert. In other words, it's not what we would expect to find in a man-made book. But it's consistent with the claim that Moses was inspired by God. Take a look at Isaiah 46. Isaiah 46 and verse 8. Remember this and be assured. Recall it to mind, you transgressors. Remember the former things long past. For I am God and there is no other. I am God and there is no one like me. Declaring the end from the beginning and from the ancient times things which have not been done. Saying my purpose will be established and I will accomplish all my good pleasure. Remember the ancient times. When God ordered things that were just not done. Telling things from the past about the future before they ever happen. There's a reason why we carry our Bibles around. This is one evidence of it. That this has to be a book from God. And we could, this is just talking about Moses' writings. You know, we could go into the medical practices that were not Mosaical. Like, for instance, it mentions in the Jesus story about the Good Samaritan. Remember he poured oil and wine on the wound? Well, oil slows bleeding, and it speeds up the healing of wounds. Wine, by the time it gets alcoholic, kills germs, and it causes, the alcohol causes blood vessels to contract. Timothy was told to take a little wine for his stomach's sake, and yes, a small bottle of alcoholic wine can, if you've got a stomach ailment, could possibly help. There were medical practices there that you can find, you know, mentions of the use of balm and other things in the Old Testament for promoting healing of wounds. It's not saying that, you know, are they like modern day practices, but no, but considering what they knew back then, they were so much more advanced than all the nations around them. And this is just a small sample of what God left for us as evidence of who He is. I hope you'll think about these things. If there's anyone here today who's not yet a child of God, there's no better time than right now to put on Christ. And for those of you who are children of God, would like the prayers of your brother on your behalf, why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the song that was selected.